It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is out of town. He's in Milan, Italy. But don't worry, Stacey Higginbotham's here, and Kevin Toefel, formerly of Google. We'll talk about Google's testimony before Congress today on privacy. The brand new Oculus, it's pretty impressive for a very impressive price. And what Google might be announcing on October 9th. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 475, recorded Wednesday, September 26th, 2018. The missiles are incoming. Poop! This episode of Twig is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today for 3 months free with a one-year package. Go to expressvpn.com/twig. And by Cashfly. Make this the last month your CDN bill gives you a headache. Join the thousands of others, like me, who trust Cashfly's reliable network. For a complimentary detailed analysis of your current CDN bill and usage trends, visit twit.cashfly.com. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show where we talk about really any old thing we want to talk about. Google is, because Google's all about everything. We can talk about everything. Stacey Higginbotham is here from StaceyOnIoT.com. Hello, Stacey.
Hello, y'all.
Coming to us from Dallas, Texas.
Indeed. Home of, well, I don't know what it's, oh, the Cowboys and the Texas State Fair. It's almost State Fair time.
I bet the
Snickers.
Oh.
Although I'm sure they'll deep fry a sneaker if you ask them to.
I think deep fried sneakers would be delicious. You could deep fry almost anything. It'd be good. Also with us, her partner in crime, Kevin Toefel, part of the IoT podcast, and editor-in-chief at AboutChromebooks.com, and a freshman in college.
Sort of.
Yeah. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah.
Great. Kevin was telling us before the show, he's taken some courses at the local JC in computer science. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? It's good, I think, to know how to code a little bit. I think everybody should at least try it.
You know what? If you like it, it's really like the best, most fun thing you could ever do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, 90% of what you make, you actually is broken. And then you spend the other 10% trying to fix. And it's honestly, if you like to problem solve and you're logically inclined, it's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I recently learned what currying is and how to create specifications for functions using Lambda. Because I'm all about functional programming.
Functional programs. La, 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 la.
It's so already much singing. Fun. It's so much fun. Anyway, we could talk about that. I actually would not mind talking about that, but that probably is a little bit esoteric for most people. Let's talk about...
It's very IoT-centric, though.
Is it?
It is, yes.
Well, yeah, because if you think about serverless and ways to cheaply perform basically trigger actions for IoT stuff, that is all functional programming does.
And one advantage, like, functional programming is kind of coming back. You know, it was all the rage in the 50s, the 1950s, it lost some of its gloss during the AI winter because, of course, Lisp was a big AI language. And people turned to imperative languages for their power, like C and C++. But it also, that was part of the reason we have so many flaws and exploits and problems. And now that we're in almost every case, not so much IoT, I guess, but almost every other case doing multi-core processing and multi-threaded computer program, people are returning to functional because it's really good for an environment where you can't predict, you know, which core is going to be active when, what thread's going to be working when. And
So I shouldn't be taking this Fortran class then is what you're saying.
I'd stay away from the old Fortran. Actually, you're taking a Java class, which is cool because you can do functional programming in Java with something called Clojure, Clojure, and Clojure script for JavaScript. And that is, that's kind of my current kind of fascination. I think that's really interesting. But enough of that.
That's not about Google.
That's not about Google. I don't know. Is it about IoT? I guess if you're talking Raspberry Pi, that's what you were doing, right, Kevin? Learning Python on a Raspberry Pi and.
Yeah. For the IoT stuff, I mean, we created our voicemail on a Raspberry Pi using Python, and nice. Then we use Python to have a light bulb turn green when like Bitcoin was up.
Oh, I remember that.
When Bitcoin was down.
Yeah. That's a good.
It was all of 30 lines of code. I mean, it's not too bad.
I like how Kevin says we. It was really Kevin.
Have you done any coding, Stacey?
I tried to learn Python. I love to problem solve, but I have to problem solve with my hands and wires, and I would be your sysadmin. I would not be your CompSci person.
You're hardware. She's a maker. He's software. She's a maker. It's perfect. It's a perfect, perfect relationship. Let's. I don't know where to start. I want to mention that October 9th, Google is going to have a Made by Google event in New York City. We will stream that live, starting at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern time. It's a Tuesday right before iOS Today. And I'm hoping, Kevin, maybe you could join us because I think we're going to see new Chromebooks.
Well, I think we are too. And I'm sure we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. The funny thing is these potential new Chromebooks, I kind of scoped out some code and some hints. And Google was talking to me about an invite for the event, to go to the event. And all of a sudden I published these little things and they're like not getting back to me now.
You're kidding. Are they mad?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised, but, I respect that.
This is your article about Nocturne. Is that what you're talking about?
Correct. And I only found it because Google actually made a mistake in their code. Yeah.
See, they should have been using Lisp. Okay.
Yes. Well, so the story is, I mean, anybody can go see the Chromium code because it's all open source. Yeah. And that's where Chrome OS is developed and so on. And all the new devices eventually roll through there, all the functionality. So I'm scoping that stuff like twice, three times a day. Well, I noticed that they had four keyboards, detachable keyboards mentioned. And the code names were Hammer, Wind, Whiskers, and Bridge, BRYDGE. Mm. Well, we all know Bridge. They make keyboards for the iPad Pro and Surface Pro.
Right.
Well, the next day I looked at that same code and Bridge was replaced with the word Wallaby. So somebody put in the description Bridge when they should have used the code name of this. So I went to Bridge's site and using Google Cache found the images that you now see.
Brilliant. Okay, that's called reportage. That is very nicely done, Kevin Tovel. So these are images that
from Bridge,
but clearly show a new Chromebook, and you think it's a tablet because it would be using the detachable Bridge keyboard?
Yes, that's correct. Bridge is making two keyboards for Chrome OS. One is, it looks like USB, and one is the same kind that they make for the iPad where you slide the tablet into the two little hinges.
Right.
And they had renders of the keyboard, but then I noticed renders of the tablet in the keyboard, and I noticed something. If you look at that, there's no lightning port. It's not an iPad. It's got a Chrome OS screen rendered on it.
Yeah.
At the top, actually, that picture that you just had looking at it from way above, there is a power button that's flat, and there's Chromium code showing that that's how the fingerprint sensor will work with Chrome OS at the top left.
So this is not just a power button. It's a fingerprint reader.
That is correct.
Oh, interesting.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And also, these devices should support acoustic echo cancellation. I found code for that.
That looks like two microphones right there.
There's two there. There's some on the sides. And clearly, when you see the keyboard, it has a Google Assistant button. It's got the Google Chrome Launcher button. And it's got the hamburger settings for Chrome OS. So there's no doubt the keyboard is legit.
Yeah.
Is that a render based on a mock-up? I don't know. But I suspect Nocturne looks a lot like, if not exactly like, what they're showing there.
So that's interesting because, of course, Google had a tablet called the Pixel C that some loved. I thought it was pretty good, but was suffering because it was running, Android, and the tablet apps were just inadequate for it. It was a very nice piece of hardware, but not such a great piece of software. But it sounds like they're going back to the well, and this time, instead of Android, they're going to use Chrome OS.
That's correct, which essentially they're using Chrome OS with Android because you can run Android apps, obviously, on Chrome OS. I had heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, the Pixel C was originally designed to run Chrome OS.
Well, or some weird hybrid that they were working on, right? That was
it could be.
I think that was what's his name's story in Ars Technica. Was that he thought that that was it? Russell Holley, who was it that wrote that story? But
Russell, maybe Ron.
Oh, it was Ron Amadio. Yeah. Ron Amadio had done some digging similar to yours and was of the opinion that the Pixel C was intended for a hybrid OS that never was released, and as a result was kind of a redheaded stepchild at Google, and which is too bad because it really, I mean,
great
Jeff
hardware.
Jarvis still uses his. It was amazing hardware. Yep. He loved it. Yep. I loved it. But Android just didn't serve it well. So this will be very interesting. By the way, I should mention Jeff is on assignment. he's somewhere trapped. Where is he, Carson? He's somewhere. I don't remember. Is it way? Where?
He's in Milan.
Oh.
That's tough life. He's in Italy. All right.
I want to go on Jeff's assignment.
Yeah, Milan is not so bad. That's the fashion and risotto capital of Italy. All right.
Is he fashionable? Is he going to fit
no.
in?
No, but he
you answered that way too
risotto.
Quickly.
He probably eats risotto. But it's interesting because most people were talking about this Google Made by Google event in October. Really, you're talking about the Pixel 3. Everybody's anxious to see the Pixel 3. And but I think a new Chromebook would be great from Google. Will this be a high-priced Chromebook, you think, like the existing Pixel books?
I think it'll be close to those prices. My suspicion is that you'll be able to buy the tablet by itself, right, and then you'll have a choice of detachable keyboards, or Google will sell you a detachable keyboard to go with it. It appears that it's going to have 8th generation Intel Core processors that will boost the price. It looks like I found more code, 3000 by 2000 resolution.
Ooh,
so
nice.
If that's the case, that'll boost the price.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I know a lot of people are kind of upset about that. I totally get it. But there's a lot of vendors that make relatively low cost Chromebooks, right? So Google wants to take that flagship design and price and go with it. That's fine, you know, and there are other options. There's great mid-range choices as well. I think this will be spec to the max, or at least you'll have choices to spec it to the max and raise the price because of Project Campfire, which is running alternative operating systems on a Chromebook.
Right, right. Google getting a little bit of heat. Chrome 69, we talked about this yesterday on Security Now, the latest version of Chrome. Logs you in to Chrome if you use any Google services, and people are worried, particularly security experts, are worried that this means its users' privacy will be violated because Google will essentially know who you are as you use Chrome.
Enterprises are upset about it too, but didn't they just say that they were going to fix this in 70?
The other
coming
shoe,
out in October?
The other shoe drop because. We talked about it yesterday. Today, Google announced, all right, we're going to fix this in the next version of Google Chrome 70. And I think that kind of underscores, I don't think Google really intended this to be an invasion of privacy. I think they thought this would be convenient for users, right? In fact, it's kind of how a lot of, like the iPhone works. You log into your Google account once on anything, the iPhone makes a note of it, and from then on, you're logged into all Google things as soon as you use them. That's kind of, I think, what most normal users want. But, you know, some experts said, well.
I think they were trying to solve a real problem, and I commend them for that. Yeah. But the communication was awful because there really wasn't any. This was kind of like found out
they didn't
after
tell
69.
Anybody. Yeah.
Exactly. So right there, that's a problem. And then obviously, and even in light of that, people will take it to the next step saying, well, gee, you sign in, all of a sudden it might sync everything of yours back to Google or to this shared device, et cetera. And they said, no, it would not be on.
Yeah,
but
that's
still,
not the case. Sync doesn't automatically get turned on. You have to turn it on.
Right.
But bad communication.
So are they going to let you, opt out of it, or are they just going to kill that?
I suspect they're going to let you opt out of it because it is a useful feature for people who just say, look, I use Google everywhere. I want to log in to Google once and have it be and this reminds me a lot of a couple of years ago, and we were talking about it on the show. I don't think you were with us yet, Stacey, when Google unified all of its services. Remember, it was a separate login for a while for YouTube, Gmail, et cetera, et cetera. And then now in this case, Google was very public about it. They changed their privacy policy. They gave people advanced warning and so forth. But I think it's the same idea, which is one account, one Google account across all Google services, including Chrome. Google clearly thinks Chrome is a Google service, which I think you could make a strong case for. But I think they also understood people's, like Matthew Green from Johns Hopkins, complaints about this and did the right thing, which says, all right, in the next version, you can change that behavior. Most people,
ironically.
Yeah,
they're saying, in fact, they have a mock-up screen of it already in the settings. There would be a allow Chrome sign-in toggle button in Chrome 70, so you could opt out. I hope that's going to be off by default.
I can almost promise you it's on by default. Would be nice to have it the other way around, but again, I don't think this is Google trying to, I mean, who knows? It's very hard to impute somebody's motivation, or especially a big company's motivation. But I think Google's just thinking this is how users work. They want it to just work seamlessly and automatically.
I mean, I know they realize that people have trust issues with them, whether it's for real reasons or not is irrelevant my point.
Right.
But you're not helping yourself by not communicating this stuff. That's what makes it so it was avoidable. Quite frankly, you know, they could have said this was coming.
An unforced error, as we say in baseball.
I don't know that.
Kevin and I know.
Okay.
Oh, Kevin and I know. Let's see. Okay, that's it. That's the show. I'm done. I don't have anything else.
You got nothing?
Oh, I bet you guys have a few things to talk about.
There's the privacy hearings. Do we want to talk about that?
They're going on, or went on this morning. I guess they're probably over now. Did either of you get to watch?
I watched for like a hot second, but then I had to go, so not usefully.
Yeah.
But I did read the testimony from people.
Google sent their chief privacy officer to testify. People were there from all walks of Silicon Valley. Apple sent Bud Tribble.
Not all walks, just the big tech companies.
Just the big tech companies, and for some reason, Charter Communications.
Charter.
The reason I don't pay a lot of attention to this, and I didn't make an effort to sit and watch it, is this is the, I don't have a lot of confidence that this is anything more than window dressing.
I think we are going to get federal privacy legislation. I think we've hit a tipping point, and the fact that California enacted their own laws will
Scared the hell out of Silicon Valley.
It did. And so you see that in these negotiations, or rather you see that in their conversations, which is, hey, let's do a federal privacy law now.
Yeah.
And most of these companies don't want 50 different privacy laws, right? But they also don't want some of the specifics of California's, which calls for more disclosure about what types of information is being cataloged. So I think actually something could happen. I don't think it's going to happen this year. Maybe next year. It really depends on the midterms. So I would, yes, this is bluster and silly and, it's our politics at work. But I do think behind the scenes, we're going to see some real action on this going forward.
U.S. News and World Reports writes, a U.S. privacy law could be good for Google, but bad for you. Congress is taking the first steps toward setting national rules governing how companies use consumer data, kind of our own GDPR. And of course, this is with an eye to states doing it themselves and to kind of preempting that. The reason U.S. News says it would be bad for you is because, of course, Amazon, AT&T, Apple, Google, Twitter are all going to lobby Congress hard to make sure that they get heard and that the privacy rules don't get too much in their way. They still have to pay attention to GDPR, though, right? California's law takes effect in 2020. It does only apply to California consumers, but all these companies have business in California.
And there's a lot of consumers, and is it the first most populous state, or is that New York?
Well, we're right up there with New York, if not.
Oh, okay, I'm just saying.
I don't know. New York's got that big city that really skews the results.
They have like two big cities.
White House spokesperson Lindsay Walters said, the goal is a policy that is the appropriate balance, and this is what Google loves to hear, between privacy and prosperity. Prosperity means profits for Google, AT&T, Apple,
That is ridiculous. Anyway, moving right along.
One quick question. Do you think, I know it's not like the FCC where they take comments on proposals and such, but do you think they might do something similar to that? Because I think people should have some input into this, or at least have commentary.
The only input we ever have is the vote, right? And good news, 6 weeks from now, we'll all get some say in this matter. I don't, you know.
So actually, hold on. 1 second. They will write whatever law they write, and then they will draft an agency, most likely the FTC, to be in charge of enforcing it. And when the FTC makes policies based around that law, then there's the possibility of civilian input as part of that process. And then there's the courts.
By the way, according to the chat room, it's California, Texas,
woo!
Florida, then New York.
Oh, okay. Thank you, chat
room. So you're number two. A motto worth celebrating. I have to say, I don't mind this notion of let's balance commercial interests with public interests, because it is completely possible that if you utterly protect consumer privacy, that you're going to change the face of technology and of the internet, right? I mean,
I'm okay with that in some ways. I feel like we have got this de facto internet good when we've seen a lot of times that I think changing the internet might not be a terrible idea. And I also would say you can roll things back. So I would be interested in some creative approaches towards thinking about privacy and how we legislate around this. I'm not going to have this knee jerk, it'll kill innovation.
Right.
And
I'm also not going to have the knee jerk, well, you just got to regulate everything because otherwise Google is going to take over the world. I understand. I mean, there's no question in my mind that Google and Facebook particularly, but Google, Facebook and many of these other companies are not exactly protecting our privacy. Is Apple? I mean, that's Apple's position is what we care.
Well, I would also bring in, I would bring in the data brokers. And, you know, this is something that I think there was actually an article talking about this, but like when we look at like the Experian, was it Experian or Equifax?
Equifax.
The Equifax data breach, for example, looking at that kind of stuff, we should probably be involving them in any of this. Not to say that the tech guys, but if we're going to really talk about data privacy.
Yeah. Because it really is companies like Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, the credit reporting companies, and then a vast number of names nobody knows that are gathering this information and selling it in the most outrageous manner. And so Google and Facebook get a lot of heat, but I've always said people are worried about Google. You should worry about your internet service provider. They know as much or more about you than Google does, and they are happily selling it off to the highest bidder without any regard to your interests.
Yep. And law enforcement. No, and to third parties who then sell it to law enforcement.
Right.
Ah!
Yep. Right.
Yeah. So these are the things that I'm like, yeah, let's bring that in. Let's talk about that, too.
I think the conversation needs to be had. Clearly needs to be had.
Oh, it should have been had. Well, when the FTC originally asked for it to be had back in 2014.
Right.
But that's okay.
Right.
I'm going to bet that this January at the Consumer Electronics Show, Stacey and I will hear a lot about this from the CEA people.
Why?
Because they're always, how do I want to say this? They almost feel like a lobbying group to me at times.
Well, they are a lobbying group.
They are a lobbying group.
That's exactly what
they are. That would explain it then.
Kevin, your instincts are correct.
You are correct, sir.
All right. I'll take CES for 200. So that's why we always hear about regulatory or anti-regulatory stuff every year at CES when we want to see what innovation there is, what devices there are, what services are coming, et cetera. You know, I don't want to get bogged down in the politics of things at CES.
Yeah. Yeah.
I, on the other hand, love getting bogged down in politics.
You can take those meetings.
I'm like, don't worry, Kevin. I would never torture you that way.
Gary Shapiro on line 2 for you, Kevin.
Gary's Book Club.
Let's take a little break. It's so fun to have you two. I always enjoy having Kevin Toefel on with Stacey Higginbotham. They've known each other for a long time.
And years, man.
Years.
A decade.
Is it that
decade.
Long?
Wow. High five, Kevin. Oh, other side.
I'm in the middle. Here, wait a minute. You give it to me. I'll pass it along to Kevin.
Bam.
Boom. Boom.
No, Kevin's like, no silliness.
Huh?
What? I'm balancing a dog on my lap. Whatever.
He's new to podcasting. Give him a break. Actually, no, he's not, because Kevin and Stacey do, of course, the IoT podcast. What's the best place to get that show?
TheIoTPodcast.com, Apple, iTunes.
Just look for IoT Podcast.
Actually, you have to look for the Internet of Things podcast, I should clarify.
The Internet of Things. You know what? IoTPodcast.com. How about that?
That works too.
That's probably the best thing to do. Our show today brought to you by ExpressVPN. We're talking privacy. We're talking about how your internet service provider might be spying on you. Not to mention the hacker at the coffee shop down the street and everybody else. You're being tracked online by social media sites, by marketing companies, by your mobile provider, by your internet service provider. Not only can they record your browsing history, they often sell it to other corporations who want to profit from your information. Let's protect our privacy using ExpressVPN. It is the number one most trusted VPN. And whenever I talk about VPNs, people are always asking which VPN. And I say ExpressVPN, people go, yeah. That's the one I use. People love ExpressVPN. They've got easy-to-use apps. They run seamlessly in the background of your computer, your phone, your tablet. They turn on with one click. They allow you to control how the VPN works. Your internet traffic will not only be secure, it'll be anonymized. They encrypt your data. They hide your public IP address. And, of course, they don't log. They don't keep track. So no one will find out what you're doing online. You can safely surf on public Wi-Fi, on your home Wi-Fi, without being snooped on or having your personal data stolen. TechRadar called it the number one VPN service. 30-day money-back guarantee is very affordable, less than $7 a month. ExpressVPN. Protect your online activity today. Find out how you can get 3 months free when you get a one-year plan at expressvpn.com/twig. ExpressVPN.com/twig. 3 months free with a one-year package. I've tried them all. This one's the best, the fastest, the most secure. And if you read their privacy policy, and everybody should whenever you use a VPN, carefully read the privacy policy, you'll see they're the best there too. ExpressVPN.com/twig. The Creepy Line. I want to see this. The Creepy Line. It's an anti-Google documentary. It's a according to The Verge, a conspiratorial playlist for the right-wing tech backlash. This is where you can go too far, right? Or no?
Wait, what?
I haven't seen it, but I want to see it. Can you see it on YouTube? Where is it?
I haven't even heard of this.
New documentary claiming to expose the dark secrets behind two of the world's biggest tech empires, Google and Facebook. And by the way, The Verge says, and I haven't seen it, but The Verge says they basically treat Google and Facebook as interchangeable, which, of course, we know better. One of the things that they claim, Google tweaked its search algorithm to swing the 2016 election in Hillary Clinton's favor. Did that work?
No, apparently not. Actually, yes, by popular vote.
Oh, maybe it did work. It also repeats the claim that Silicon Valley is censoring American conservatives on web platforms. So this is the problem, is that this you can go so far in the other direction that I think that's not fair either. I guess that's the counter argument to this notion that, well, we got to protect people's privacy. Let me see where you can see The Creepy Line. I'm just looking at a review.
Yeah, it premiered in New York City, and they have not announced any full release details yet, so don't think we can see it yet.
Can't see it.
I think it's a clever title, because I guess it goes back to Eric Schmidt saying, you know, there's a line that once we cross it, it gets creepy, and we try and go just to that line.
Yeah. Right up to that line, says Eric. Poor Eric. He... he really got, he got, he, I don't know if it's because he was extra candid or what, but he would sometimes say things that just did not.
He didn't help himself at certain times. Yeah.
Unforced errors again. Another baseball analogy. Actually, Eric is in the news again this week. He says that the internet, he predicts, will be bifurcated into Chinese internet and the U.S. internet.
It sort of is, in a way. No?
Oh, this guy's nuts that did this trailer.
Oh, you're now watching the trailer for this?
No, yeah. I'm reading about who's writing about it. The papers that are... It's weird that The Verge even talked about this. But the documentary guy is very, very much on the right. And this is very much...
Well,
okay,
and that's
so
kind of the
like
thing
propaganda.
You have to... Yeah, you kind of have to be careful about, because you can really play into...
Well,
fears.
That's what we were just doing here, Leo.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, no, we're not, yeah, okay.
So we don't want to go that far.
Well, this guy clearly has an agenda. Also, what is that noise that is happening in the background?
That's me, and I apologize. I'm using my laptop today because I wanted to show Mojave on MacBook Weekly, and it keeps dinging at me, and even though I've turned off the sound several times, it seems to be independently. You know, it's this damn touch bar. If you type
it
all.
Oh, I thought it was Kevin's water heater.
Ding. Ah! I turned it off. Look, see, I'm turning it off. Oh, I guess I can't turn it off. I get it. Even though I'm pressing that button, it's still going through to the HDMI. I get it.
Mac OS Mojave. Looks good.
Mojave. You want to see the dark mode? You see the desert? Ooh, welcome to the desert. That a little later today will get dark. Anyway,
I don't see how it happens because we all know the Earth is flat, but whatever.
Yes, and that Hillary Clinton won the election apparently in 2016.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Let me see if I can just turn my sound off.
Here. So the chat room says that the creepy line was written by the filmmakers of the conservative documentary Clinton Cash.
Yes.
I did it again. I did it again. Okay, now it's muted.
Hands on your buzzers.
All right, back we go. Facebook is giving advertisers access to your shadow contact information. The marvelous Kashmir Hill is at it again. Last week, she says, I ran an ad on Facebook that was targeted at one person. Alan Mislove, he's a computer science professor who studies how privacy works on social networks. He had a theory that Facebook is letting advertisers reach users with contact information collected surreptitiously. And so she said, I helped him test the theory by targeting him in a way Facebook had told me previously would not work. She used Mislove's landline number, a number he says I never gave Facebook, to create the ad. And he saw it within hours, even though Facebook shouldn't know that number.
What's crazy, and okay, a lot of the story is crazy in like negative ways, but also the fact that Facebook was gathering, like if you used your real phone number for two-factor authentication, they were actually using that. And I'm like, that is using security in a way that is, I'm going to go with underhanded and pretty low.
Yeah,
I'd be pissed if I were a security researcher.
Facebook had also done things with the app, and then they get caught, and they, as always with Facebook, said, "Oh God, we didn't mean to do that."
Yeah,
oh,
Facebook
so
crosses the creepy line in a way like Google. I feel when they cross the creepy line, it's usually because they are not 100% sure where the creepy line is because they're engineering kind of focused.
That's kind of my attitude. Yep.
Facebook crosses that line in bold pursuit of profit and then denies it and backtracks and keeps pushing as far as they can.
Well, that takes us to Kevin Systrom. Yes, because this is actually a little battle that's starting to rage now. Kevin
and Brian Acton.
And Brian Acton. Of Kevin Systrom, of course, one of the creators of Instagram. Brian Acton, one of the creators of WhatsApp. Both said delete Facebook. I think. Well, I don't know if Kevin said that. Brian did famously when he left Facebook. He tweeted, delete, I think it's his time, delete Facebook. Kevin just quit He was made a billionaire several times over by the acquisition of Instagram. He quit this week, leaving Facebook and leaving people with the impression that there was a little bit of a disagreement between Systrom and Zuckerberg. There's also a really interesting interview with Brian Acton in Forbes by Parmi Olson, in which Acton I think you could say Systrom didn't say anything. Maybe it was a little innuendo when he said, "We're going to go off and be creative again." Kara Swisher pointed out that "again" sounded like a little bit of a elbow to Mark Zuckerberg. Brian Acton is not being subtle about this at all. Let me see if I can find some of the quotes. He said he left because Facebook, well, at first he went to Zuckerberg to say, look, we have an agreement that I can leave and get all my stock. The issue, of course, is how much of the money that Facebook paid for Instagram he would get. There, he apparently left $850 million on the table. He says, I didn't intend to, because there was a clause in the acquisition agreement that said if Facebook should start to monetize WhatsApp, he could leave and get all the stock. If Facebook began, quote, implementing monetization initiatives without the consent of Acton and Jan Koum. So he decided, well, that's what they were doing. He said he decided to pursue two ways of making Facebook had decided to pursue two ways of making money from WhatsApp. First, by showing targeted ads in WhatsApp's new status feature, which Acton felt broke a social compact with its users. Targeted advertising, he says, is what makes me unhappy. They also wanted to sell business tools to chat with WhatsApp users. So he said, I'm leaving. And I want all my stock. He was called to Zuckerberg's office. A Facebook lawyer was present. And they said, this is not clause. This is not invoke that clause. You can't get the full allocation of stock. WhatsApp had only been exploring monetization initiatives, not implementing them. And then Acton says in this article, Zuckerberg, for his part, had a simple message. He was like, quote, he was like, this is probably the last time you'll ever talk to me, end quote. Acton said, rather than lawyer up or try to meet in the middle, he just left and left $850 million on the table. Now there's a story, a Facebook post by a guy named David Marcus. The other side of the story, he said,
Dave Moran, right?
He says Acton's attacks are a new standard of low class. Dave, you're talking Dave Morin?
Isn't that who he talked to?
This is David Marcus wrote this.
I thought he had talked to Dave Morin. Okay, doesn't matter.
I think Morin has left Facebook long before this.
No, but I think he. He quibbled with the Acton portrayal.
Not having a Facebook account, I find it difficult to read these articles, so I'll have to trust you on this. First, there are a few companies out there, writes David Marcus, that empower and retain founders and their teams for as long as Facebook does. Systrom and Krieger, the other Instagram founder, thrived at Facebook for 6 years. Koum and Acton over 4 and 3 years, respectively. Koum and Acton. Yeah. For some of them, Facebook is a place they did their best work. Second, on encryption, business model. I was present in a lot of these meetings. Mark protected WhatsApp for a very long period of time, and you have to put this in the context of a large organization with businesses knocking on our door to have the ability to engage and communicate with their customers on WhatsApp the same way they were doing it on Messenger. Oh, okay. So there was a lot of pressure from sponsors. Okay. During this time, it became very clear that while advocating for business messaging and being given the opportunity to build and deliver on that promise, Brian actively slow-played the execution and never truly went for it. Lastly, call me old-fashioned, but I find attacking people in a company that made you a billionaire, it's a good point, and went to an unprecedented extent to shield and accommodate you for years, low-class. It's actually a whole new standard of low-class. Also, in Stratechery, a great article, I think, as always, by Ben Thompson, talking about Kevin Systrom, saying that the CEO of Instagram, as soon as he sold to Facebook, really is Mark Zuckerberg, and there's no other way around it. And as soon as you sell your company, that's what happens.
And that's that. I feel like everyone talking about Brian Acton, and I'm like, okay, yes, he left a lot of money on the table, but
he got a lot.
He went
too.
To try to get that money.
Right.
He got a lot of money.
Right.
And it's really easy after you sell your company to Facebook for $22 billion to be like, oh yeah, I mean, there's no doubt what Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook are going to do in this situation. There
exactly.
was never any doubt.
If you sell your company, you can fight to keep it from being monetized, but it's kind of in a way what Ben Thompson's saying over at Stratechery is you're selling your company to Facebook. That's what they do. They're a business. And he says that's the difference between creating a product and running a business.
Well, no, and I would say you don't even have – okay, I agree. That's sort of true. But you don't have to run a business the way Facebook runs a business.
No.
You can run
a
business.
But you do have to monetize.
You have to monetize. And Brian Acton actually talked about doing some sort of pennies per however many.
Which Sheryl Sandberg said is a non-starter. Wouldn't scale.
It wouldn't scale.
and Acton says to Sandberg, the CEO of Facebook, well, you don't mean it won't scale. Of course it'll scale. What you mean is it won't make as much money as our plan.
And you know what? That's good for him for calling that out. I mean, but I will say that part of the problem here is you take venture capital, you suddenly have people on your board who are going to push you to make the most lucrative exit possible, which will take the goals of your company and change them. And, you know, this is why.
Once you sell your soul, you can't really complain that the devil is a bad guy.
Exactly.
You can, but, you know, you're not going to get a lot of sympathy. And it won't matter. You certainly can't go like, I'm really sorry about my users. I have to live with that every day from my yacht.
From my yacht. Uh-huh. Stratechery, Ben Thompson. Systrom was never the CEO of Instagram. To be a CEO is to have a company that can stand on its own. The difference from Zuckerberg, Instagram's real CEO is stark. Facebook launched in February, sold it in 2004, sold its first ad 2 months later. You know, they basically was always built to be a viable business. And I have to say, I agree that a lot of times with apps and a lot of the startups in Silicon Valley, there's never really a notion of, well, how is this going to be a business? It's more, how are we going to exit? How are we going to return the money to our investors? And that doesn't necessarily mean by making a profit. Uber loses billions a year.
And that feels disingenuous, and it's a problem because your users, you're going to piss off your users.
Yeah.
If you say to them, you know, oh, if you're going with this like network effects, we got to scale, we got to get as many people as possible. And then you suddenly are like, oh crap, we have to have a revenue model.
Yeah.
People don't like to pay for stuff that they used to get for free.
Yeah.
Hello, we are in journalism. It's really hard. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Go complain about this to somebody who is not worth $3 billion and see how they feel.
Anyway.
Oculus.
Someone in the chat. Oh,
go ahead.
Oculus was going to do. I was going to talk about Google for a second. Someone said it's Google's 20th birthday, but.
Is it?
I'm not trying to doubt the person in the chat room, but I was like, I feel like I would have noticed that.
It is the 10th anniversary, hard to believe, of the first Android phone, the G1,
right.
Which I have. Could you get me my G1, John? It's back in my... Google was founded in 1998, August 9th.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, let's see. They incorporated Google as a privately held company September 4th, 1998. So it is 20 years and 3 weeks old.
Oh, it says tomorrow, September 27th, is Google's official 20th birthday or anniversary. So
wow.
Google created a special logo.
Oh, let's see.
Google's saying that on... Oh, my internet is slow.
There's no Google Doodle today at all. Which is
they have the first Doodle up there. If you go to google.com/doodles, you can see the very first one from August 30th, 1998.
Oh, my. Ew, ugly. Well, it was a Burning Man doodle. Ew.
Oh, this, This shows a bunch of them throughout.
This is a great site. You didn't see this? This is the Google Doodles.
But I didn't realize.
Here's the 20th birthday one, which they've put up, but they've put on their site, but they haven't yet put it on Google.com.
Right.
There's the picture of the Google, what it looked like 20 years ago. What will happen? And they're showing some searches. Now I wish I hadn't turned off the sound. But you know what? You'll be able to see this in living color.
Tomorrow. Ta-da. Okay, so I feel better now.
You're not wrong. It's its 20-ish birthday.
20-ish. You know, as we remember, I'm sure you remember this, the debate over, is it the internet's birthday? Oh, today is the internet's birthday. Yeah. This is the 20th year,
endless.
25th.
Endless.
Like, oh, yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday, Google, and happy birthday. 10 years after Google founded, they created the first Android phone, and I happen to be one of the nut jobs that bought the G1. It was 10 years ago on Sunday. And it had a keyboard sliding up, and it had Android Cupcake, I think, on it. It did have a little trackball? That's cool.
Trackball.
Yeah.
Yeah. That lit up with different colors, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. It had a phone button. Remember, phones in those days had a physical phone button, a physical home button, the trackball, a back button, and a hanging up button, but most conspicuously lacked a headphone jack. Nope. They invented that, you know.
This is before media was played on your phone.
They did have a camera, though. Look at that.
Mm.
This was very disappointing because the hardware just didn't live up to Android's promise, and so Android really was sluggish on this and not
ready. Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with the original hardware was going to be very BlackBerry-like in a sense,
saw the iPhone, they went, oh my God, we can't release this,
and they changed everything.
Slab of glass.
Yeah, and that brought years of capacitive touchscreen lawsuits, pinch to zoom, all kinds of
slide to turn
stuff.
Off. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The only people who got rich on that were the lawyers.
Yeah. Android was pretty hideous back then, though, I got to say.
It's come a long way, baby.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's take a little break. More to come. Kevin Toefel, Stacey Higginbotham. We could talk about the Oculus event today. I'm sure you guys talked or are aware of that. Is there IoT news?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And I apologize. I didn't prepare a change log for this week, but I will have one for you. Oh, you did? Well,
I saw a change log.
I will do Karsten's change log. Thank you, Karsten.
Yay, Karsten.
God bless you, Karsten. A Google change log also coming up. Wow, there's a lot of stuff in here.
Yeah, dude.
Holy cow.
We've been saving
it
up.
You go away for a couple of weeks, then boom.
Wow,
what happens?
Google's been busy. Our show today brought to you by, literally, CashFly. If you've downloaded any of our shows over the last 10 years, you've downloaded from CashFly. And CashFly is exactly what you want in infrastructure. Invisible, right? No problems. Downloads fast, right? Because CashFly is a content distribution network. When you're downloading a Twitch show from CashFly, no matter where you are in the world, you're downloading it from a server near you, which means it's fast. It means it's 100% availability. That's important to me. We work hard on these shows, putting these shows out, and if you can't get it, all that work goes to naught. CashFly guarantees 100% availability with a bulletproof 100% SLA, service level agreement. I love CashFly. Remember the last time you were woken up at 3 in the morning with frantic phone calls because your CDN was out? I don't. Never happened to me. Not in 10 years. And also, the other issue that a lot of people get is these billing spikes with the CDN. You can't predict your traffic. And a lot of CDNs will start charging you like crazy. So it's not unusual for somebody who has a CDN to be logging in every day saying, are we okay? Have we exceeded our limits? Oh, my God. I don't have to worry about that. I don't have to track my CDN usage because CashFly's contracts are flexible. They're built around my demand, my traffic patterns. They work for me and they will work for you. And, of course, support 24/7 from the best team. I love these CashFly guys and gals. smart, easy to talk to, agile techs that can answer all your questions right away. They don't pass you around five different departments. We've been hosting all of our podcasts, audio and video, on CashFly practically since TWIT began, certainly since TWIT began to be big. Petabytes of data downloaded every month from CashFly. Petabytes. Man, if I didn't have CashFly, I wouldn't have a business. Join the thousands of people like me who trust CashFly's reliable network. If you deliver content to customers, whether it's games or podcasts or video, you got to check out CashFly. We've got a special deal for you. If you go to twit.cashfly.com, you can get a free detailed analysis of your current CADN bill and usage. CashFly will tell you, will help you get the best deal possible. Many CashFly customers, on average, CashFly customers save more than 20% when they switch. Go to twit.cashfly.com. We thank CashFly so much for making TWIT exist. Without CashFly, TWIT does not exist. And now it's time for me to read Karsten's changelog.
The Google changelog.
I'm going to be doing this cold, kids, because I didn't put this together. This is these are from Google's blogs. Changelog is always about new things at Google. And this is a post that's kind of celebrating Google's 20th, helping you along your search journeys. Nick Fox, who's Vice President of Product and Design, Search and Assistant at Google, talking about new features, things like the ability to retrace your searches through activity cards. This is a new activity card you'll see. They don't call it Google Now anymore, do they?
No.
What do they call it?
I think it's been called the feed for a while, but the next item on the changelog will tell you what the new name is.
It's got a new name, but you know what I'm talking about, those activity cards. This is, and by the way, I love it that Google has to, and they do have to do this, put in fine print, only you can see these. Don't worry.
I find that comforting, actually.
Yeah, of course it is.
Sometimes it's like, oh, I'm looking up city name or something, and it's like, you're flying there tomorrow. And I'm like, Jesus, does everyone know?
This is the related activity cards. They say, we're intelligently showing you this card only when it's useful. It won't appear for every search. And, of course, you have full control of it. You can remove results from your history. They
context.
Have something. Yes.
It's all about context.
I love, you know. I was a fan of Google Now. I'm still a fan. I use it all the time. And when I got a new iPhone, of course, the first thing I do is put Google on it. Google Assistant.
Mine went away.
I know. You have to put it on again.
No.
No?
I was just complaining about this with Kevin.
Wait a minute.
I think it's because I'm logged in maybe as my Google Apps account, but I no longer have my, and I'm really upset because I loved it. And now I can't even use Google. I'm like, hey, Google, when's my next flight? And it's like, oh, you should totally like enable the assistant. And I'm like, I thought I did. So I go and hit the button.
Let me ask Cortana. I'll find out.
So now I'm having to ask Madam A, and she is not nearly as smart
know
about
nothing.
These things.
No. That's what Google's doing. They're just making you appreciate them, and then they'll come back next time.
But I don't. I have chosen the corporate web services over all of its context-based tool services because basically, I need everything to be the same on my calendar.
Yep. This is Jeff Jarvis's years-long complaint.
I know. I sound like Jeff. I'm just whining. Technopanic.
It's completely reasonable. And I guess because TWIT uses G Suite, I mean, my twit.tv email address is a G Suite address, but I just don't use it because I want, you know, my Google Now cards or whatever they call them these days. And I want the assistant. You pull up the assistant, it has all that information, the useful information. There's a new thing, too, called collections. You'll find this in search to help you keep track of content you visited. Dynamic organization of search results makes it a little easier for you to figure out, you know, how all this stuff is related. There's a new topic layer. Boy, they have been busy. There's a new topic layer in the knowledge graph. It's built by analyzing all the content that exists on the web for a given topic, and then develops hundreds and thousands of subtopics, just what you need. Let's see. Introducing, it's not now, it's called Discover. A new name and look. It's Google Now, only it's called Discover. New topic
new
headers.
New icon, too.
New icon. Where does this show up? In the Google app? I know on Android, you just slide right? Let me see. Wait a minute. I have my Pixel
Yes,
here.
Mine's now blank. I miss it so much.
It's completely blank.
It's completely blank. That's Let's see if I can show you.
That's horrid.
It is. It's so frustrating. I'm going to confirm that it's blank before I show you, so it doesn't like tell you anything. Yeah. Okay.
Watch it work.
So here's
now.
My phone.
Yeah. Swipe right. No.
Oh,
other way.
Wrong right.
Other way.
Wrong right, Stacey.
What the what? That's like crazy. You have no That's life. Now watch.
Exactly.
I'm gonna swipe right. Oh, look at this. An article
That's
about
what I used to have.
The number one sign of high intelligence, according to Jeff Bezos. An article about Elon Musk, the Surface Tesla model. It knows what I like.
Well,
I love you, Google.
Insult to injury, you guys. Now I have to use Google News, and I swear to God, no matter how much I try to customize it, my stories are all celebrity crap.
Oh, I know. I hate that.
I'm so mad.
Calm down, Jeff. Calm down.
So somebody in the chat room said, instead of swiping right, Google swiped your life.
Oh. It used to be so convenient. It'd be like, hey, you're going to be in this place. This is going to be the weather. Here's some news you'd like on the Internet of Things. And now I feel like stupid.
I love this. It even shows me our podcasts. It knows here's a Security Now show. Latest Google leak. It even knows I'm doing Twig. Latest Google leak seems to confirm rumored Pixel Stand wireless charger.
See? Yes, I get. Are you ready for this? Elijah Woods spotted riding a scooter in Austin. Star Wars VR series, Vader Immortal coming. I don't care.
It knows you live in Texas. Let me just see what I get. See, I like Google News. I get the Kavanaugh story.
I get
CNN, 24 hours, Star Wars. Oh, I'm getting it. Vader Immortal.
You're getting it too.
Yeah.
Okay.
AgitPie slams cities and towns as the FCC erases $2 billion in local fees. Tesla knows I like Tesla. Android at 10. Mark Judge's former girlfriend? I don't know.
Oh,
you know, I've been in Europe for 3 weeks. I don't know what's going on. And actually, I'm much happier not knowing what's going on.
Oh, my gosh. Although I will tell you that Google just told me that Hanson, the Mbop guys, have a staggering 12 kids between them.
That's a lot of Mbopping. Wow.
That is a lot of kids. However, I would much rather had something on the FCC's new 5G order because I have strong feelings about it.
That would be interesting. So, yeah.
Stacey, you might have to like redo your interests, you know, like wipe it.
Something's gone very wrong.
I'm constantly telling it to stop showing
Hanson.
Sports stuff
Hanson.
And entertainment stuff.
Hanson.
But it's like, you know, every now and then you click on something and you're like, oh, I should not have clicked on that. And then Google's like, I'm recording.
Oh, got you. Got you.
Treasure.
You may deny it, but we know you're interested in Hanson.
Were you signed into Chrome?
Probably.
Sign into Chrome.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Google News is just crap.
I love it.
I think it's crap. I've been for the last, whenever we started talking about it several weeks ago.
You tried to give
optimizing and thumbsing up and down and trying to make it work. And
is your daughter using your Google account?
No, she has her own, like everything.
Okay. Mm. Mine's
she's boycotting Google News.
The only thing that's weird about Google News for me is they've decided to put a lot of local Petaluma news in.
I actually like the local Austin news. I get, even if it's Elijah Wood.
Yeah, but you live in a big town.
Oh, well, that's true.
Local news in Petaluma.
Not so much.
Well, let me see if I can find you some of the big stories we're covering.
Two tomatoes from one flower grown today.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I guess, you know, in a way that's reassuring, right? Well, life goes on. But it's funny because when when I'm traveling, this was my only source of news pretty much. And I really didn't care that, you know, two tomatoes grew from one seed. But anyway,
I took a guess.
Yeah. No, it was a good guess. It's pretty close. All right. The change log ain't over though, kids. So now it's called Google Discover. It was Google Now, then it was the Google Feed. Now it's Google Discover. More than 800 million people use the feed each month to stay up to date on their interests, writes Karen Corby of the Group Product Manager of Search. Today, as a part of the three fundamental shifts in how we think about search, we're launching a major update. The new name and look, Discover. new topic headers that will explain, and maybe this will help you, Stacey, why you're seeing a particular card in Discover. Yeah.
I bet it's because it thinks I'm a girl.
It's because you're a girl. It doesn't think you're a girl.
It would be correct.
I think it's right.
It used to think I was a guy.
Oh.
And I got to see all sorts of...
you got some good stuff.
Well, I got things more tailored to my interest. I'm not judging that. To me, I'm more like a guy, according to Google.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've known you 10 years, and I never knew that.
That Google honestly thought I was a guy?
Yeah, I never knew that.
There's all that Googling about chips and software-defined networks. Yeah, it's
that's
like,
really that's shameful if that's really what's going on. But
I agree.
But they fixed it now.
Yeah.
Now they don't think I'm a guy.
No. And they think you're interested in Hanson's 12 that, yes. children.
Yeah, exactly. And the Kardashians. I get a lot of Kardashians.
I think this is interesting. Evergreen content. They're going to put more content that isn't new to the web, but new to you.
Well, that's good. I mean, you miss so much actual good content by cutting through, you know, going through all the BS. So
yeah.
I love it if it delivers, that is.
You should check, too, because they say there will be new ways to customize it, Stacey.
I am going to check. And I'm actually... I'm trying to figure out, and I was following some admin things, which I do this like once a week, trying to get better Google services.
There's one other thing to do, and they say this is new too, and this may not be there yet, but if you go in your browser to google.com, you're going to get the feed in there. Discover will be part of that, the Google homepage in all mobile browsers. I don't have that as yet, but that may be... That's going to roll out over the next few weeks.
It would not surprise me that this shows up as an option on Chromebooks for the new tab page, too.
Oh, that's probably why, right?
That's just a guess, though. I haven't seen any code saying that, but it would not surprise me.
More, according to Kathy Edwards, Director of Engineering, Google Images, more visual content in search, more imagery, more videos, illustrated weather reports, live sports clips, the visual recipe experience, three fundamental shifts. Boy, search has been busy in how we think about search, including a range of new features that use AI to make your search experience more visual. Immersive visual content with stories, full screen. Can you believe she's 48 years old? Visually preview topics. I'm talking to the screen. Visually preview topics with featured videos in search. So you're going to get these videos in the search results. Visual journeys with Google Images. And you'll be able to use Lens. Let's hide those in the visual search results. So that's kind of interesting.
There's another story in the changelog that you have to talk about, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
You're going to thank me for this one.
I am thanking you already.
All right. The Safety Center, helping you stay safe online, which quietly was published about 6 days ago. But if you look very closely, scroll down there.
Yeah.
Don't even read the article. Don't even read it. Just scroll down. Yeah. Okay. What do you see there?
I'm trying to get rid of this show. I hate this show.
Yeah, no, I'm not a fan of
that.
It's
not now. It's not going away. It's just I'm clicking it, and it's
hi Joe. Yes, no.
It's because you know life would be better if you wouldn't use Safari, Leo.
I'll tell you what. You could always right click on the image and open it in a new tab because it's the image that I want to point out.
Is it this image in particular?
It is. It is.
All right. Well, let's take a look at that image in a brand new tab. It's a Chromebook Pixel.
Is it?
Isn't it?
I don't know. Are the Pixelbook bezels that small?
Oh, no, they're not.
No, they're not. And in fact, I believe the image name is Pixelbook_2.
Ooh!
You tell me if it is.
Pixelbook screenshot_1.
Ah, they maybe have changed
it. Maybe they changed it because they didn't want you to think this is the Pixelbook 2.
Well, too late for them because I wrote it up yesterday on my slate.
Whoops.
Which explains, again, why I haven't heard about that invite coming up.
You're not going to get that invite. You keep this up. That's really interesting. Or it could just be a modified screenshot, right?
Let's talk about that for a second, because the marketing people would have done that. And guess who worked in marketing at Google for Android and Chrome? Oh, that would be me. You have to go through like 20 layers of approvals and reviews to get something put on that site.
Really?
I know that for a fact. Oh, absolutely. Oh. PR, legal, product team.
Oh, yeah. I remember you complaining about that.
I know that for a fact because Kevin discussed how frustrated he sometimes felt.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you should hear me when I'm not speaking to however many people are listening to the show talking about this. But anyway, they don't make mistakes like that.
Interesting.
And on top of that, the leaked ads, which may or may not be true, all had a Pixel Book with minimal bezels just like that. So I'm thinking they're kind of at this point trolling us because everything's getting leaked about the October 9th event.
Interesting.
And I think that's what is happening. That's the only probably visual change you'll see on the outside. And then the internals will be beefed up with the latest gen processors, et cetera.
Nice. Maybe, Kevin, here's a conspiracy theory. Maybe they really like you and want your site to do well. It's about Chromebooks.com, you guys.
Oh, we should have mentioned that. You're right, Stacey. About Chromebooks.com. About Chromebooks.com. It's all about Chromebooks.com.
I wish we had mentioned that at least, you know, once.
Thank you, Stacey.
I'm just saying.
It's one thing for me to suck at marketing myself. It's another thing entirely for me not to help you guys do well.
I will market Kevin to the ends of the earth.
Yes,
I'm like, quality content from Kevin.
Yes, she will.
It's about Chromebooks.com.
Well, but this content came from Google themselves, so it's got to be legit, right?
Other changelog news starting. They're really making me not use Safari. That's what this is all about because half the page is hidden by related articles. Starting today, you can use Google. Oh, I know why, because I made everything bigger. Starting today, there we go, you can use Google Maps to easily plan where you go as a group. Long press on any place to add it to a short list, the small floating bubble on the side of your screen. And once you see that floating bubble, it looks surprisingly like chat heads, the Facebook chat bubble.
Yuck.
Once you've added places, you can quickly share the list with your friends on any messaging platform. Add or remove additional places or vote together in Google Maps. So that's cool. You can just basically you're aggregating locations together into a little bubble, which you can then share. Nice. The group planning feature starts rolling out on Android and iOS this week. To get started, download the Google Maps app or update it from the Play Store or App Store. And finally, in the changelog, the things you'll find. Congratulations. Today is your day. You're off to great pages. You're off and away. You have brains in your head and fingers on your hands. You can search for whatever you doesn't scan. You can search for whatever and see where it lands. You're on your own with an empty white box. Roll a dice, flip a coin if you're feeling lucky or not. Doesn't rhyme. You'll spin around pages. Do a barrel roll with care. About anagram, you'll say, did you mean isn't right there? With your head full of brains and your hands full of fingers, you're too smart to tap any Super Mario box figures. By the way, all of these are links. If you do not find... What?
No, okay, keep going.
See, I'll click on a link. See, it brought me to Super Mario box figures. Barrel roll? We've seen this before. You ready? Hold on to your hat. We're going to do a barrel roll. Maybe if I hit it again, it doesn't do it anymore.
But they link to it.
That's so weird. And if you do not find links that you want to click on, then go back to the start, type again, and hashtag search on. But searchers, beware, we've hidden more things. So this is basically a tribute or an insult, depending on your point of view, to Dr. Seuss. And in it, links to all sorts of Easter eggs in Google. So this is really a great, page if you want to find all the crazy stuff.
I'm playing Breakout right now.
Yes. It's so funny that you said that. It's exactly what I clicked on.
Yep.
It turns into an Atari Breakout with the image search of Atari Breakout. Isn't that hysterical?
I used to have that on my TI-65 or 63 graphing calculator.
64A.
Calculator.
Yeah. Nice. Zerg rushes?
Mm-hmm.
What's a Zerg? Oh. Look, there's Zergs rushing. All the O's are taking over my... They're eating up... Oh, my God. They're eating the search results. This is fun. So, this is a... What you should do probably is it's on the Google keyword blog. Search for the things you'll find. And you'll get the poem. But in the poem are links to a lot of Google Easter eggs over the years. This must also be celebrating part of the celebration of 20 years.
It's a nice showcase. And I have to say, for all the complaints that people may have about Google trying to control the web with AMP and certain codecs and all that, they still do some really cool things to show off standardized features in HTML and so on. So, you know, it's nice to see this.
They're fun. Google's fun.
That they are.
It's a fun company. You know, honestly, I should never have tried to do that in Safari. It just broke Safari all kinds of ways, but it works nicely in Chrome. So do it in Chrome. So whether you, and I'll end it with the final stanza, whether you're Aussie or Kenyan or mostly Hungarian or an Indo-Peruvian Czech vegetarian, you're off to great pages. Today is your day. Your search page is waiting. So get on your way. That's kind of cool. I like that.
I hope they paid Dr. Seuss's estate something.
Nah. And that's the Google changelog. That's the most anticlimactic bumper ever. It's like, we gotta
That's
add.
That's gonna be my ringtone.
Boom, boom, boom. It's almost as bad as da 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 da. The Price is Right. Thank you for doing that, Karsten. In my absence, Karsten continued with the Google changelog tradition. New York Times is suing the FCC, saying it hid evidence of Russian meddling in net neutrality repeal. Wow. What is the time standing in this? I mean, they're, I don't understand. They made a FOIA request in June.
I was going to say, did they answer the FOIA stuff?
Ah. This led to a months-long process in which the Times repeatedly narrowed its public records request in order to overcome the FCC's various objections, but the FCC still refuses to release any of the records requested by the Times, so they're suing in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York.
There you go.
That's it. They're not suing for money. Mm-hmm. They're suing for information.
Go, go, FOIA.
FOIA.
Which is, well, I mean, I guess you can't go up against the New York Times. They have actual lawyers. But there's been plenty of times I've made FOIA requests and I get back like all redacted pages and I'm like, you punks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if you've got money and you've got the wherewithal and you're in the public interest at heart, that's exactly the process, right? You could then go to court and saying they're not living up to their requirements, the FOIA requirements.
Yep. Thank you, New York Times.
And thank you, CNET, who points out that if you want to convince somebody you're not a robot, use the word poop.
I use that word all the time.
Oh, poop.
I do. That is a phrase that often I say.
Researchers at the University of Pennsylvania and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology tried to create something they called the minimal Turing test. They asked themselves a question. If you could use only one word to convince a human you weren't a robot, what word would you choose? Well, that's interesting. They had 1,000 participants. 400 words were suggested. The most commonly suggested words related to concepts most people think an AI might not understand, like love or soul, compassion or mercy or swear words. One curious choice made by a number of people, according to CNET, please. Now, if I said, are you a robot? And you said, please, I would say you're a robot for sure. I think Stacy is a robot.
I am. I am a male robot, according
You're
to Google.
You're a replicant.
Replicant.
The researchers.
Well, that blows CNET's whole theory out of the whack, because she says sure. Poop all the time.
Poop!
Exactly.
So they put all the suggested words into a big bin, selected the most nominated word from each category. They took now another 2,000. This is a lot of work to go to this for this. This is somebody's looking to get a PhD. 2,000 new participants, a random combination of two of the 10 words, then had them select which word they thought was chosen by a human and which word chosen by a robot. After all of this, the word most likely given to another human being you're not a robot is poop.
Wait, that's what people thought?
Yes. So you understand what they did? They first got a panel of 1,000 people to come up with words. They sorted them. They massaged them. They triangulated them. Then they got another 2,000 people, at which point their professor, their advisor is already saying, guys, you're not going to get your PhD. And they get another 2,000 people, and they take one from column A and one from column B, and they say, okay, here's two words, please and poop. Which one's said by a human? Which one's said by a robot? And poop.
Yes. Yeah. So when Skynet goes online and we get attacked by the things, we're not sure if they're a human or robot, we're supposed to say, do you need to poop? And see what they say?
You know, we might not have to wait that long because...
This is not even valid at all.
Into thinking you're not a robot.
You would say poop!
You would say poop.
All the robots now know that! Thanks, MIT and the University of Pennsylvania, for telling the robots!
This is very confusing. Okay. Moving right along.
Wait. She's confused by this poop conversation.
In 1 week from today, right? Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm not sure which, right before the show next week, for the first time ever, FEMA will test the presidential alert. Everyone in America with a cell phone will receive the same text message on October 3rd at 2:18 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To test the readiness of the presidential alert system. By the way, the message is not poop. It is, this is a test of the National Wireless Alert System. No action is needed. Unless the guy in Hawaii gets a hold of it, in which he's going to say, the missiles are on the way.
Yep.
Now.
Poop.
poop. The missiles are on the way. Poop. The test will last about a minute. 100 mobile carriers will take part, which kind of blows my mind because I didn't know there were more than four. This is not something you can disable. Now, have you heard the Amber Alert? Have you ever heard the alerts and it's the first thing you do. The first thing you do when you get a new phone and you get one of those. Sometimes it's a dangerous weather alert or whatever, is to go into the settings and disable them, right? Except the one thing you cannot...
No!
Yes!
You can't do that? What if someone's child was stolen?
First of all, you're right. What if somebody's... But it's never that. It's always the father and the mother had a dispute.
That's still dangerous. I see that you were not as altruistic as I am.
I am cynical. And the other thing is, I get these alerts, and it's somewhere 200 miles away. They don't narrow it
down. Okay, yes. That's because you live in California. In Texas, we have that same thing. They're like, someone in San Saba has been kidnapped.
You don't care? What are you supposed to do about this? I'm going to look for a dusty blue Chevrolet.
Okay, if I get one in the area, I totally look for the car.
Do you really?
Yes.
That's so cute.
It's my job as a citizen.
That's so cute. You can't disable the presidential alert. So you're going to, no matter what, every phone in the United States at 2:18 p.m. Eastern time next Wednesday is going to go, this is going to be hilarious.
It's a shame we won't be doing Twig at that time.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm not sure if it's unfortunate or fortunate. I think it's unfortunate. I'll be doing Windows Weekly. But wouldn't you like to be like in Times Square? Or,
never
at a Knicks game or never.
I want to know who's going to vet the message.
Well,
this isn't political. I mean, granted, they do say it will be.
It says presidential.
It is presidential. Okay, but it is not.
It's unprecedented. They've never done this before.
But it is something that we've been working for years.
It happened after the flooding. They said, we've never used this system. We probably should try it just to see if it works. It's complicated.
It's like a test of the emergency broadcast
system. Just like that. Or they now call it the EAS, the emergency alert system. But
I was out running. This is related, trust me. I was out running yesterday, and we had massive thunderstorms, and my weather app gets the National Weather Service alerts. And I left the phone behind because I was running with an Apple Watch, which has LTE. And I was about a mile into my run, and I got the loudest alert coming out of this.
Wow.
From my watch, because it has LTE.
Right.
It scared the bejesus out of me.
Right.
I've never heard the speaker on this thing so loud. It was like they had a special volume setting that they could override on my Apple Watch or something. It was really loud. I was shocked. So
it's like a back door to the volume.
Incidentally,
could be.
And I don't want to give anybody ideas, but if you're North Korea and you were thinking about attacking the United States, 2:18 p.m. on Wednesday would be a great time to do it. Because we'd all go, oh, no, that's the test. That's the missiles are incoming.
Yeah.
Poop. In fact, if you're Kim Jong-il, I would add poop to that message. Just to really throw them. For some reason, when does daylight savings time end?
Isn't it like November, the first weekend
because
of November?
Unaccountably, this announcement from FEMA says it will end at 2:18 p.m. Eastern Standard Time next week. So what time is that really?
So it's going to be an hour long?
I don't know what it's... It doesn't... It,
turn my watch off.
No, I'm sorry. That was a mistake in the FEMA announcement says EDT. So actually, the FEMA announcement says 2:18. And then there's an EAS alert at 2:20. So the whole place is going to go crazy. Cell towers will broadcast the WEA test for approximately 30 minutes, beginning at 2:18 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. During this time, WEA-compatible cell phones that are switched on within range of an active cell tower and whose wireless provider participates in WEA should be capable of receiving the test message. Some cell phones will not receive the test message, and cell phones should only receive the message once. That should worries me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The WEA test message will have a header that reads presidential alert and text that says, this is a test. So just so you know, it's just a test.
I'm just going to say it. If it says witch hunt, I'm done.
That would be hysterical.
It would be funny,
witch
honestly.
Hunt.
Yeah.
No, y'all, it would be sad. We're just
no collusion. That would be witch funny. Hunt. That would be the best presidential alert ever.
Sorry.
No, it can't happen because, you know, as you know, FEMA is part of the deep state, so it's not going to happen. Let's see. That would be pretty funny, though. Witch hunt, poop! China. Wow. This is kind of, from Reuters comes this story, and it's a little bit just depressing. David Stanway writing. China shut down more than 4,000 websites and online accounts in a three-month campaign against harmful online information. This is according to China's own Xinhua news agency. 4,000 websites and online accounts in a three-month campaign. More than 147,000 pieces of, quote, harmful information, end quote, were removed. The campaign targeted content in online fiction that spread improper values, vulgarity, and obscenity, as well as content that infringed on copyright.
See, they have their own internet already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah.
Did you guys see right before we started the show? You probably didn't because it literally happened right before the show. I caught an article on Wired that I threw in here closer to the top about, I found this interesting. Mobile websites can tap into your phone sensors without asking.
Yeah.
What?
What the heck? Yes.
Yes,
they can, the light sensor, like two or three other sensors, Stacey, because the web standards don't have a way to prompt the user to allow it or not.
Lily Hay Newman writing on Wired.
Yeah, that was surprising. And I'm surprised in a sense that we're just finding out about this now because it's not like mobile websites and smartphones are new.
Researchers at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign and Northeastern University, North Carolina State, and Princeton found that of the top 100,000 sites as ranked by Alexa, 3,695 incorporate scripts that tap into one or more of these mobile sensors. Wayfair, Priceline.com, Kayak. If you use Google Maps in a mobile browser, you'll get a little pop-up that says this website wants to see your location, and you can authorize that. But with motion, lighting, and proximity sensors, there's no mechanism. And there isn't, so because there isn't a permissions infrastructure, the browser just does it.
Well, if they write a script to.
But you have to actively be browsing.
Yeah, but yes. And by the way, so what? If they get my proximity to the phone or my orientation, it's not my sexual orientation, it's my orientation in space.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with the information, if anything.
The researchers note that on a malicious website, the information could fuel various types of attack, like using ambient light data to make inferences about a user's browsing, or using motion sensor data as a sort of key logger to do things like PIN numbers. You know,
You can identify a person based on how they walk, and you could actually get a motion sensor.
But you'd actually have to be. I mean, this isn't going to be useful. It's not like they could turn it on and then watch you walk.
No.
No.
I guess the point is that this is something people should be aware of, because we know that the bad guys are really kind of amazing at how they can extract information from the skimpiest of resources, it seems.
I was thinking how it's more important to use this to say, hey, these pieces of glass that you have collect a lot of information and can leak information about you.
That's exactly the truth. Yeah. So Oculus had an event, and they announced a bunch of new things at their VR developers conference, Oculus Connect. There is a new Oculus in town, the Oculus Quest. Mark Zuckerberg said $399. It's standalone. You don't have to wire it up to a computer. It's wireless. Hand presence, 6 degrees of freedom. And Zuckerberg said it runs Rift quality experiences. And there will be 50 games at launch designed to use it.
Wow.
I haven't used any VR headsets in a while. I think the last one I used was maybe Samsung's or Google's. Maybe it's just me. I don't find I use them for like hours and hours, like I would use a computer or a video game console or whatever. It's like,
I think it's a gimmick, honestly. It's a little gimmicky.
It feels very like bite-sized to me. Like, okay, after 15 minutes, I'm like, okay, now I can go look at something else, I guess, but this is getting kind of boring. It could be me. I don't know.
I don't like having people say it's games or entertainment or maybe even therapy, but I don't like it because I don't like not being able to see my surroundings when I'm surrounded by strangers.
You know, it's so funny you say that, because I say that all the time, that somebody could sneak up on and bonk me on the head.
Yeah. In my case, sexually assault me, because, you know, I'm a woman.
They could sexually assault me, too.
That is true. It's less likely.
But more painful. Maybe not. Poop! That's my safe word, I've decided. That's because I'm not a robot.
There we go.
Snapdragon 835 in this thing.
I'm so not excited about VR. I really wish I were.
Isn't that funny? None of us,
you should find someone who is.
There are lots
of
people who jump up and down and say this is the next big thing. And I think I'm a little more bullish on mixed reality. But even that, we had Amy Webb on Sunday on Twit, and she has a Magic Leap, the reference one, the $2,500 reference one. And she says she's a futurist, but she really can see that this is going to be something big. It's not yet, but it's going to be something big. I don't think you can say the same thing about VR, at least not as it stands today.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, for the price, 6 degrees of freedom, pretty impressive. Google, by the way, is testing the same thing with Google Daydream.
Mm-hmm.
Although that would require a Android phone plugged into the headset.
Right.
So, you know, maybe they'll say something about this on October 9th. I don't know. It's going to be, how long is that event going to be, Kevin, you think?
I imagine it will be pretty long. I don't think they're just going
to talk about.
You know what? If Amazon could do their thing in like 70 minutes, there's 70 news items in like an hour and 25 minutes. So what's that, 85 minutes? I feel that Google really needs to step up its game.
So I wasn't here for the Amazon announcements.
I was there for the Amazon.
Yeah, this is all. This is right up your guys' alley. What do you think?
There was a lot, and I think that Amazon basically articulated the clearest vision for a smart home that's actually smart. Not only did they articulate it, they also started putting together the necessary elements. So things like easy getting devices on the network easily, things like voice, like organizing your rooms by voice, things like hunches that are going to say like, hey, you just told me good night, but it looks like you left a light on.
Wow. I think that's interesting.
All of that's, and they showed off things like Guard, which is going to turn everybody's echoes into a glass break sensor and a smoke detection sensor. So those kind of things.
How would it detect smoke?
It listens for your smoke detector.
Oh, so you still have a smoke detector.
So yeah, it detects your smoke detector.
It's actually a smoke detector. Yeah, okay.
Got it. And then they launched a module, Wi-Fi Bluetooth module that's pre-certified, which is a big deal, so you don't have to go to the FCC and all the other agencies. You pop that into your device, and you can build something like that $30 Amazon wall clock they showed off.
Oh, that's really neat.
Sorry.
Subscribe to that while you're at it there, Karsten.
And subscribe and to that so we never see it
include
again.
They include a bunch of costs as well with that, right?
They do. Well, like they include cloud connection costs. So that means if you buy that module, you don't pay for cloud costs. Now, it doesn't say how far that goes. I'm imagining you can't like create a video camera, pop that in, and you know, freeload on Amazon.
That's pretty amazing, though. So how much is the hardware?
Right now it's in developer preview, so we don't know, but you can sign up and get a board. It's on an Arduino.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
I love that idea. I mean, that's basically Amazon saying, everybody go out and make some IoT devices. Let's see.
Yeah, that's what their smart, that microwave that everyone's like, I don't know why people are so excited about this microwave, but yes, that's what they did. They built that clock and the microwave and then the
Amazon.
Auto. Echo, Auto. Echo.
Yeah. Were those all built with that Arduino device?
Those three were built with using that module.
So really, because we were mocking the microwave and all that. It was really more to demonstrate what you could do with this IoT module.
And they're really neat. So not only did they do this module that's like, oh, you're not familiar with building hardware and antennas and certification with agencies? No problem. I got you. Boom.
Got it.
Here, take that. And they created a new version of and I'll just say her name, Skills API that basically lets you define your device in three different like categories that you can build something that's Madam A enabled very quickly, like 10 minutes.
Wow.
Quickly. So
that's super smart because there are thousands of people who will jump on that. We'll do that. And you could see all sorts of interesting stuff out of it.
And
ultimately, it benefits Amazon. Even if they give you free bandwidth for a year or free servers for a year, it's ultimately going to benefit Amazon. They'll make money off of it. So we were talking about this on Twit on Sunday, and I'm curious what you two think. Does Jeff Bezos have a grand overarching vision? He's not talking about it, but in his head, or is a lot of this serendipity? Like, we got some extra servers. Why don't we give people a chance to rent it? We could call it, I don't know, Amazon Web Services. Or, wouldn't it be interesting if we charge the people a flat fee once a year for unlimited two-day delivery? How much would you charge for that? I don't know. Let's make it $69. It looks like it's serendipitous.
No, it's part of their process.
Do you think there's a grand plan?
I don't think there's a grand plan. What I think Jeff Bezos has done at Amazon is made it easy to build compelling things for the end customer, whether that's
so he's created an organization that facilitates this kind of thing.
Yes, because if you look at, like, you know, all of their products start with a press release, right? You cannot pitch anything.
That's the whole way. That's the way it works. You don't go to a meeting with a PowerPoint deck. You go with a press release for the product.
So when you think about building, if your goal is to sell things to a customer, right? And actually, this gets into my choice for this week, so it'll dovetail nicely with that. If that's your goal, having that customer focus, it's not just BS the way he says it. It really is that, because it entices the user in and you build with that end goal in mind in a way that others, I don't think, do. So I don't know if it's a grand plan to, like, dominate the world so much as it's a, hey, let's make things that people cannot bear to give up, that people will love and use and bring into their life, even if it's maybe slightly poisonous to their overall societal well-being.
Who cares? We'll figure that out later.
It's like the sugar industry and the fast food industry.
But I think there is the overarching sense that if we do this, this will be I will become the richest man in the world.
Yeah, I think Stacy hit the nail on the head, and I think all of this from a hardware standpoint obviously starts from the original Kindle, which wasn't great, and they reiterated, and now it's like they're commodities. I mean, you can buy a refurb Kindle for $30-$40
right.
And you know, it's just an enjoyable thing to have and to use, and you have, you know, your foot in the door with a customer now with a relationship. I think the only time they really got away from that strategy and didn't think of the customer as well was the Fire Phone. But the Fire tablets, all these Echo devices, they're not just cool, neat, gadgety things. They are helpful and they're not terribly expensive, relatively speaking. So, you know, I think Stacy's right in the grand plan. It's a very customer-focused approach, and other things come along for the ride, such as all the data and the cloud services and whatnot. Google, on the other hand, I think is more data-driven. You know, it's a little different type of company.
Although I would say Amazon does use its data to understand. So even about the microwave, I was like, oh, how many cubic feet does that have? They're like 0.7 at 700 watts. It's the most popular brand of microwave that we sell on Amazon. I was like, oh, so that's why you made it that size? He's like, exactly.
And they do have that data. There's no denying that.
Oh, yeah.
You see them do it, too, with Amazon Web Services. What happens is they are very carefully analyzing things like, who's using, who's a big customer, what are they doing, what kind of tools are becoming popular on the site. And if they see something that's becoming popular, they'll either productize it themselves or they'll buy the company that makes it. And usually they just productize it themselves, though. So they are, yes, customer focus, but they do use that data and they use it in a way to, like, kill their competition. Mm-hmm. It's pretty awe-inspiring.
It's kind of amazing. Have you ever been to the Museum of Ice Cream?
Oh, I saw it. I went by it. It's an Instagrammy thing.
Yeah. So apparently, this is a whole thing. I know about it because some of our employees have been there. There's one in San Francisco. There's also the Museum of Pizza. There's the Rose Mansion. Amanda Hess at the New York Times wrote today's article, "The Existential Void of the," they call these pop-ups, "the pop-up experience. I went to as many Instagrammable museums, factories, and mansions as I could. They nearly broke me." And it is a fabulous piece full of, there's video, but also pictures from these crazy, I don't even get the point. Maybe Facebook's sponsoring these secretly.
Industries will sponsor them.
Ice cream, right?
Brands will sponsor them.
Candytopia. And the whole idea, here's a candy pig spewing confetti out of the wrong side, I might add.
Poop.
This is one of the artworks of the Museum of Ice Cream. Here are selfie-taking visitors enjoying the sprinkle room. It is a room full of, we used to call them jimmies.
Yep.
Right?
I think it's a regional thing, whether you call them sprinkles or jimmies, but yeah.
Oh, all right. Yeah, this was in Rhode Island.
Same
we called them jimmies.
Yep.
Yeah, sprinkles. Here is the I don't know what you call this, the cherry room, the museum of ice cream, the ball pit at the color factory. Oh, I worry about this society because really this picture here of two young women lying on a faux fur rug taking selfies. Both of them, by the way, have those bizarre pop-up devices in the back of their phones.
Those are useful.
This to me is what people, you know, archaeologists 500 years from now will look back on and say, this was the quintessential experience of the 21st century right there.
No, they won't, because it will be all gone, because we're not archiving any of this.
Oh, thank God.
It's all ephemeral.
Thank God.
You know, I have so many thoughts about this. I'm so interested in these things.
Me
and
too.
Not just to make fun of them, but I'm just really curious, like, what people get out of it. And there's clearly something. It's really important to people.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot, I mean, so, but I find it baffling, but I'm also so curious, like, I don't know. I mean, I can see why people are doing this, because these are perfect for getting, you know, likes on Instagram and connecting with people. And
I feel like
creating.
It's almost a deep psychosis that this country and this generation is entering into.
But it's not everybody. It's just some people.
No, but that's what worries me. It's the young. It's the future.
It's not even all the young people. I mean,
well, yeah. Kevin, you're studying computer science with young people just out of high school. Is this typical of them, or is there more to be said for that generation?
They really don't talk to me, so I don't
Who's
know.
That old guy in the corner?
I mean, I do talk to them, but they're pretty focused on class, so I don't know. That's
is there a lot
question.
Of selfie activity going on?
Not in class, I can tell you that.
That's good.
No. Okay, there you go.
So do you use one of those pop-out things on the
Okay, so I don't, but I've been playing with people who have them on their phones, because my daughter's friends all have them on their phones.
Oh, yeah. Everybody.
I am getting one, because it's, you can actually, like, watch stuff on your whatchamajigger phone. Like, you can set it up, and, like, you can use it to hold your phone in a way that would make it easier if they're too big.
They're called pop sockets.
Pop
sockets. And my son is quick to point out that they were invented by somebody at CU Boulder, where he went to college. And the main thing is, this is the worst kind of pop socket. It's just a black rubber pop socket. Most of the time when people get these, they get them with something on them that says something about who they are.
I don't know why Google, like, they don't have, like, a live case for a live pop socket.
Yeah, well, they will, believe me.
So I have a question about these things. I see them all the time.
Everywhere.
My daughter has one.
Yeah.
So is it just me, or, like, what? I don't want one because I would lose out on my wireless charging.
Oh, that's a good point.
Excellent. No, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't wirelessly charge my phone.
Oh, yeah. You can't, because you couldn't put it on the charger.
Yeah. I mean, they look nice and convenient, but
apparently,
I'm not gonna,
according to reviews on this Amazon listing, beware of counterfeit pop sockets.
I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say it.
Poop! Let's take a break. Poop sockets. Let's take a little break. And lady and gentleman, if you will prepare your picks or tips of the week, I will be eternally grateful. I shall be choosing a pop socket for each of my phones.
I'm going to get the narwhal with rainbows.
Exactly! Exactly!
Do they make Beatles ones? I don't know.
Yes. I guarantee.
Oh, hey, is there any Beatles news, Kevin Toefel?
Yes, I have a special thing for you in the bottom of the show notes today for that.
I'm so excited. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. When it comes time to buy a house, this is a big deal, right? It's the biggest check you'll ever write. It's something you and your family are going to live in for a long, long time. And it can be a little anxious. It's certainly not something you want to be rushed into or feel rushed or anxious about the process. You want to be able to pick the right house, right? But as most of us, you know, you're going to have to get a loan. You're going to have to go and the last thing you want to do is go to a bank and, you know, get all dressed up, try to look prosperous. And, you know, the banks don't want to lend money to anybody who needs it. So you got to look like you don't need the loan, but I'm going to do you a favor and I'll take the money. Then you fill out a big, you know, 20-page application, much of which will involve calling banks saying, you have my statement from 2010, or former employers that you may not even get along that well with saying, I need to get some pay stubs from you, please. All of this just to get a loan. It's crazy. That's why Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country, number one in volume, but that's because they're number one in our hearts, number one in customer satisfaction, 8 years in a row, according to J.D. Power for mortgage origination, since 2010. They created something to take the anxiety, the stress, the pressure out of buying a home loan. They call it Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage, yeah, you know we've talked about this before. It's an entirely online mortgage approval process. You don't have to go to the bank. You don't have to fill out a long application. You could do the whole thing on your phone if you want. And it's, they call it the power buying process. It's got three steps. The first step, the pre-qualified approval step, takes usually under 10 minutes, just a few minutes. They ask a few simple questions. You get that pre-qualified approval. Then, within 24 hours, Quicken Loans will verify your income, your assets, and your credit, and they'll give you verified approval. That means, essentially, you're like a cash buyer. When you go to buy a house, when you go to make an offer, the seller looks at you as if you've got the cash, because you do. You're verified. You even get a letter if you want. Look, I'm verified. I've got approval. That's nice. But then the third step kicks in. Once you're verified, you qualify for the all-new, exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock your rate up to 90 days while you shop. So there's no pressure because, you know, rates are going up. And that's a big deal. When even a quarter point interest rate increase over 30 years got cost you tens of thousands of dollars. You don't want to have the pressure. Oh, we gotta buy this house. It's not perfect. But if we wait any longer, it could cost us thousands of dollars more. But you don't have to. With Rate Shield approval, you know what your rate's going to be for up to 90 days. If the rates go up, your rate stays the same. Oh, here's the good part, though. If rates go down, your rate drops. So it's a win-win. It's exactly why Quicken Loans is America's largest mortgage lender and best. To get started, it's simple. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. rocketmortgage.com/twig. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. It's rocketmortgage.com/twig, rocketmortgage.com/twig. This has been a fun twig.
Ooh, I just found my pop socket.
Yeah? What'd you find?
What is it?
I'm going to go with the blood marble. That looks nice.
Mm. See, but you can show your band. You can show your team. You can, blood marble. Blood marble. You sure you don't want opal?
Blood marble.
Iridescent snake?
You know, I was actually looking at opal and the Really Mermaid, but I decided blood marble.
Deathly Hallows, glitter, rainbow showers, blue nebula, marble sheet.
Blue nebula was.
Ooh.
That was a contender.
Checker black, New York Yankees. Banana Republican. I don't know. I think that's not felicitously named. Palm Granite. Shark Jump. Wow. Notice it's all millennials with these things.
Ooh, no, the white and rose gold.
Oh.
Mm.
That's pretty. Ooh.
Now I really want one. Ooh, they have pop wallets too. Look at that.
Pop wallets.
Pop wallets.
That's handy.
Yeah. I used to have one of those.
And some of them, if they have iPhone cases, so if I did have an iPhone, I could buy a matching or a complimentary iPhone case.
And then you could get an Apple Watch and we can do walkie-talkie all day.
Do you have an Apple Watch, Kevin?
I do.
Well,
I
let me add that you to my walkie-talkie here.
Sure.
You lose, Kevin. You lose.
No, it's Kevin. Okay. Poop.
I'm going to be in class and all of a sudden my watch is going to go poop. Great.
Great. Kevin, you said you have something to make a Beatle fan happy.
I do. I have a tech thing and a Beatles thing. You want the Beatles thing first?
Either one.
All right, let's do the Beatles thing. Just because Leo and I are big Beatles fans, and I keep working on Stacey for that as well.
Wait a minute. Hold on there. What? She's not?
I'm not a Beatles fan. Not a Beatles fan. I like them.
That's
just
the kind of thing
like
a robot would not say.
Yeah, that's the word.
Okay. What are we talking about? Is there new Beatles music?
Well, there's always new Beatles music, which is really just remastered old Beatles music.
You know,
but
I just got a Prince. I guess there's a ton of stuff in the Prince library in the archives. Yes. Prince just released a new album of, it's called Mike and Piano from 1993. That's awesome.
His estate released it. He may not be excited about it.
He's definitely not excited about it. But
no.
he was very particular about what he released.
I know. And that's why it's all in the vault. But the estate. Anyway, what is this? What are we getting here?
So the White Album, 50 years old, this month, next month, I forget which, but they're coming out with all these special versions of it, you know, remasters and LPs, EPs, DVDs, and everything else that rhymes. And if you go, I put a link in the show notes.
Oh, I want this.
Even if you don't get this, because I don't know how much these sets are.
$69.99.
Well, that's not bad. I'll probably do that then.
Wait, but I bought the Sgt. Pepper thing.
Yeah, so did I, and it was excellent.
Fantastic. It has outtakes. It has studio chatter. It's fascinating to hear how, for instance, A Day in the Life evolved. I mean, it's just wonderful. Mr. Kite is, you know, and to hear Lennon singing and then changing, and it's just wonderful. So I would love this. This is the same thing with the White Album, I guess.
Yes. What they're doing, though, is they actually are allowing you to listen for free to three different takes of Back in the USSR.
Wow.
One is the original demo. I put a link in the show notes, and if you click it, you can play the demo in either Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, et cetera, whatever you have.
Go back to
you
that.
Can play it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So you hear the demo, then you hear take five, which was the final take that they used, and then you hear the remaster.
Actually, let me play it through our. I remember I disabled
my. Do they have the demo on there?
Sound. That's the release version, 2018
mix.
Let's go down here. Let me see if I can find. Here's the Escher demo. Is that the one?
That's the one. Just and it's amazing how the song has evolved from demo. Here you go.
Oh my God! This is for a Beatles fan. Actually, anybody interested in music and the process, to hear these first takes, oh, it's so great. It's fantastic.
Yep.
This is Lennon. And here's Paul, I think. Yeah. Wow, I'll probably get in trouble if I play any more of that, but that is fantastic.
Like, you can just picture these guys sitting around on a sofa just
well,
doing
and their
this demo.
Horse, which I love, and all of these takes are like, they sound like they've been smoking all day, popping prellies and smoking all day. Wow, that's
great. They're prellies.
Oh, ask Kevin. 5 hours and 26 minutes.
Poop.
Prellies are the uppers. That they were all hopped up on. They were they brought back from World War II by British servicemen. I don't know what was. They're probably methamphetamines, but John and mostly John took a lot of prellies in the early days. Did you? This is all from that most recent biography. When is the second volume of that coming out? By the way, Tune In, Turn On.
I don't know.
Did you read the Beatles Tune In?
I did read the Beatles Tune In.
Oh, I thought it was fantastic.
Excellent.
I've read every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Of every one of the Beatles things. Volume one was All These Years. When Mark Levinson, when is volume two coming out? That's my question. I'm going to be dead by the time volume three comes out. Because it's taken like 5 years between each volume.
There's so much information they have to collate and put together, and they want to do it right, so I get it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I get it, too. It's definitive.
Yep.
What is your other pick? Now we're going to hear my
sound all day. One of our IoT podcast listeners reached out to us just today on Twitter.
Just today.
And told us just today. Imagine that on the internet. They mentioned something called Pie Hole, which sounds rude.
Oh, yeah.
I did not know about the Pie Hole, but if you get yourself a cheapy Raspberry Pi, get, you know, $30, $35, whatever, and you go to the GitHub for Pie Hole, you can download software that is an ad blocker network-wide in your home. And it just looks awesome. There's a web interface. I actually have a spare LED counter here. I might hook that up to the Pi and see if it can show me how many ads it's blocked just for a little IoT project. But yeah, Pi Hole, that's, did not know about it. So that is a wonderful tip that we got from one of our listeners.
twit.tv/KH355, episode 355 of the Know-How Show. We'll show you how to make your own Pi Hole with Father Robert Balasair and Patrick Delahanty. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. And this was based on a Pi 3B, one of the newer Raspberry Pis, but it's still only $35. It's pretty cool.
Right.
Pretty darn cool. Good choice. Stacy?
Sorry, I'm stuck yawning.
I gotta pry you away from the pop sockets just for a moment.
No, no. I found my pop socket. Okay. So actually, there are two, because I was going to use this like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. But Kevin showed me this. So technically, it's from Kevin. But just in case you guys didn't know, let's see. Oh, I've got a... I'll do my... So if you type find my Android into your Google search, it will find your phone for you.
Oh, I love that.
I, again, had no idea. And you can make it ring.
Love you, Google.
What'd you say? Oh, love you, Google.
I said, love you, Google. Locating my phone. Yeah. Actually, it's not that phone. The problem is I have quite a few Android devices. Let's find my current Android device. Oh, it's right here. It's right here. Now watch. Oh, it's ringing right now. I think it's going to ring. I'll just press that button.
Boom.
That's my ringtone. That's not. Look at that. And then it says press volume and up together.
Oh, I thought it said press the power button.
Press power and volume up.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so if you're like me, I leave my phone on all the time. And the cool thing was it rings your phone even if it's on Do Not Disturb, which was key for me.
Yes, which mine was. So that's pretty impressive, yeah.
So, okay, that was one. So, yay. And then the other one is an article that I alluded to earlier. It is from Real Life Mag, which I've never heard of. But it was a really good look at what we're acquiescing into when we let Amazon control all parts of our lives.
Oh, boy.
So I thought it was really thoughtful.
The constant consumer.
Yeah.
Amazon's mission is to make customer identity more primary than citizenship. Oh, that's an interesting insight, isn't it? Wow.
Well, and it's like, so Amazon's obsession with customers appears to have endeared them again and again to a public that should know better.
I really,
customer obsession is a happier narrative for this dominance this than one of aggressive market capture. So, you know, take a look at this. It's definitely, it has an agenda, but it's very thoughtful. So
this is great.
I enjoyed it.
Good recommendation. Thank you. It's from reallifemag.com. The Constant Consumer, Drew Austin, the author. Well, this has been such fun. I almost hate to call a quits to it, but I think Stacy has to go get some queso and Norm needs some chowder. Or Jimmy's. No, Norm, you can't eat Jimmy's. No sprinkles for Norm.
Oh, yes, he could. He can eat anything, trust me.
Not chocolate, surely.
If he finds it, he will.
Actually, the good news about Jimmy's is there's not much chocolate in them.
I don't think they're Jimmy. Are sprinkles, do they have actual chocolate? I thought they were like, I don't know.
It's like asking, is a Tootsie Roll actually chocolate?
Oh, no, it's just nasty.
I found Mario, one of our employees yesterday, rummaging through the candy. We have a giant bowl of candy, as you know, Stacy, in the kitchen. And he was going like this, and he pulling out all the Tootsie Rolls. And I said, what are you
eat?
Doing? Yeah. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, at least they're not real chocolate.
Okay.
I said, take them. They're yours.
Yeah.
I'm sure Debbie has a bag of them somewhere hidden away, which is our office manager does, in fact, have a bag of them hidden away.
Tell Debbie I like Sour Patch Kids if I'm ever there.
Oh, you need but say that once, and they will be here the next time you come. Andy Inaka once said, I like Mexican Coke. It's got real sugar in it. And there was a case of it waiting for him when he showed up.
Wow.
Kevin, what do you like?
When I'm doing the show, Gatorade. After
Gatorade.
The show,
we're not getting
Manhattan's.
You Gatorade. Thank you. Kevin Toefel, of course, about Chromebooks.com. Say it with me, kids. It's the place to find out about Chromebooks. We will certainly be talking to you after October 9th. Be very curious to see how close. I think you probably nailed it.
We will see. And yeah. I think I might be, if I'm not on the show with you guys during the event because I'm at the event, I believe I'm going to be on the show,
and as
this
know,
show, the day after.
That's up in the air.
Yeah.
It's as yet to be determined.
Anyone watching from Google who wants to invite Kevin, he's quite knowledgeable about the products.
First of all, they want Kevin. He's going to be there. But if you're not, we invite you to be part of our live stream. 11 a.m.
Sounds good.
Eastern time, 8 a.m. Pacific, October 9th. Hashtag made by Google. You'll find Kevin on the IoT podcast with his co-host, the wonderful Stacey Higginbotham. Stacey on IoT.com is her website. Don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter. It's free and it's great reading. We do Twig every. I'm so glad to be back. I missed you guys. I'm so glad to see you both. It makes me smile. We do Twig every Wednesday, 3 p.m. Pacific. I'm sorry, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. If you want to tune in, you can watch us do it live at twit.tv. That's before we edit all the poop out. twit.tv/live. You can watch or listen because we have audio streams as well. You could be in studio if you want. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll be glad to put a chair out for you if you're going to be in the Northern California area. We'd love to see you. And otherwise, you can get on-demand versions of everything we do at the website, twit.tv/twig, or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated and delivered to you via our fine content distribution network. Thanks, everybody. See you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.